This week, we make a last-ditch effort to complete our New Year's resolutions. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace Process.
Other country.
A government can't control the economy without controlling people.
We will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God.
Ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man.
To remind America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Now.
The Midwest.
Now.
Peace.
Now.
Process.
Now. 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 Now.
Now. Welcome to episode 54. Today is December 13th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
Hey, we are on location for our year in review.
Can you say the date again, Jerry? I just want to make sure.
December 13th.
All right.
December 13th, Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a little mix-up on the date. Rob got confused.
By simple math. That's all right. It's my brain works so efficiently, I throw out tiny details that are irrelevant to the conversation.
Right, right. We should know that about you.
Like what day of the week it is.
So we are here at one of our favorite haunts. We're at GC Food and Brewery. I want to give them a shout out and say thanks for hosting us once again. And the sound should be a little bit better this time than the last time we were here when the Cardinals were in the hunt for the World Series. It was pretty crazy here last time. So tonight we're going to talk about, each of us has come up with our top three stories for 2012. We may hit a couple others, depending on how many beers we make it through here. I'm on my second.
Going strong.
So either you guys want to start, what was your number three? Well, we'll start with our number three.
Number three, I would say...
Oh, and here is our lovely Anna. Waitress, Anna.
I'm going to pretend to be shy now because people think it's cute.
Anna's already told us she does not want to participate.
But she does feel strongly about things, but we don't know what things yet.
Yeah.
Like muscles. Those are strong.
Oh, that was quite a turn of phrase.
What kind of muscles? Oh, sorry, we're not going there on this show.
No. Captured it forever.
Is that a family heirloom in the church?
No, I collect cameos because I'm a really old person trapped in a really young person's body. Well, not really young.
Let's not go over there.
I'm going to correct myself before someone else corrects me. Are you guys doing okay?
Doing great.
We just started the show. So, yeah.
Do you like people call in and talk to you?
No.
Only here.
It's a podcast.
We record it now. And
I don't have my own radio station.
But we in past episodes when we've been here, we do have people just come up and randomly start talking to us.
Yeah, it was one of the guys that works here, Dad's buddy, Sergeant or something.
His name is Sergeant, or he is a?
He is a sergeant. Big guy.
Oh, that was probably Brian.
Brian?
Yeah, that's exactly right. How
about that?
I remember. Because he thought he was really cool. He was like, I'm famous.
We let him think that for a while.
You know, you just gotta, especially when they're starting out, let them think whatever they want.
Right, right.
All right.
All right.
So, back to the show.
Back to the show. My number three story is Ron Paul winning Iowa. When Rachel Maddow, during her show, I forget what she was in the middle of talking about, but she just stopped and said, I think Ron Paul just won Iowa.
Right.
And not that it really made much of a bump in the media, mainstream media, but to me that is how the process is supposed to work. Like a grassroots effort going against the establishment,
right,
and getting a guy in there, giving a guy a chance.
Yeah.
And I think that's how America was built. And I think we have been away from that for about 100 years. You see flashes of it every now and then, but I think that was the original intent and originally the way things operated.
Right.
This is a little bittersweet. Like, didn't Mitt Romney get claimed the winner until?
Yeah, he did.
Right. So, he and Santorum tied, right?
Right.
And then Santorum claimed later that he won by 8 votes or whatever. But in the end, neither one of them won.
Right, but then it became a footnote. Like, this is just a sad thing about all this stuff, you know?
Yeah, and that was the other, like, some people were a little bit, I don't know what the word is, they wouldn't say that Ron Paul sold out, but he didn't keep that charge going, because there were other states where he took delegates, and they were supposed to have this presence at the Republican National Convention. And they were going to make a statement there. Well, all that kind of went by the wayside.
Yeah, that fizzled.
And Clint Eastwood talked to a chair instead. That was...
Yeah. Well, my understanding is it was not for a lack of trying. It was just, you know, the Republican establishment just shut them down completely and told them, look, we're not inviting Ron Paul to the convention. He's not going to get to speak. And, you know, you guys can nominate him from the floor if you want, but...
And I don't really... I understand, I guess, why they wouldn't want a disruption, because that would take away from the message that this is our guy. But some part of me thinks, how can that happen?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, why have a convention? Right?
Yes,
I mean, if it's a foregone conclusion going into it, you know who the nominee is. All of that is theater then.
Right. It is theater, and that's what most things are. That's,
right.
That's what most elections are, is just a theater.
He had a candidate particularly devoid of soul as well. So it's like
we had two candidates.
Nice. But you just... It was... I mean, I think the Republicans in that moment were not... They were fired up about the possibility of him winning, but they weren't fired up about the guy himself, you know?
Yeah.
So you kind of had the Ron Paul people who were kind of pushed to the side, and you had this sort of enthusiasm gap about the person himself. Yeah. It was bad. It was real cynical, real no soul kind of thing. Because that's what Ron Paul brings. He brings an authenticity. He brings a real, like,
right,
an actual message and a real
passion.
Belief and a passion, right.
Right.
That's not manufactured and not, like, prepackaged.
And not pandering.
Right, right. And when he gets tripped up with a difficult question, he just gets tripped up because the question's difficult. It's not because he needs to go ask his...
Yeah, what am I supposed to say? I forgot to check.
Right, right, right. I wasn't coached on that question.
Yeah, the classic was there was some press conference done by teleconference. I guess they do that now with Romney, and Democrats took advantage of this moment where they asked Mitt Romney what he thinks about the Lilly Ledbetter Act, and they were like, "We'll have to get back to you." You know, it's like, well, we didn't think you were going to ask about that. But Ron Paul would just tell you what he thought, you know.
1 second while I look that up on Wikipedia.
Right.
Yellow Ledbetter, I love that song.
Yeah, and that's just a classic part of the Ron Paul movement. It's like the Chicago Cubs, you know, just the
it's
lovable.
Nothing like the Chicago
Cubs. It's like even when he won, he lost, right? Because it came out in a footnote, and the most I've heard about it was from Rachel Maddow, because I think she appreciates the authentic politics.
Sad. Anyway, nice story. Way to bring us down.
Yeah. No, that was a good
story. And what's going to happen? Come on, bring us up. What's going to happen? Do you think Jerry has a theory that Ron Paul intentionally didn't make a fracas so that the Paul name can live on?
Yeah. Rand Paul has certainly been making some indications, or I can't think of the word, but
signals
that he's wanting to continue what his father started or tried to do. But I don't know.
I think he's passed the torch, maybe not explicitly, but especially, you know, if Rand can get elected to a second term in the Senate without the Tea Party, I think the Tea Party's done. I don't think if he wins again, it won't be because he's a Tea Party favorite. But I think, you know, if he can win a second term in the Senate, he'd have the name recognition at that point. He could probably make a run for it. We'll see.
If he can keep the TSA off his back.
Yeah, that's right. Even stay off the no-fly list. That'd be embarrassing. Try to run a presidential campaign and you can't get on an airplane.
It makes me optimistic about how not optimistic you guys are, though. Woo! 2012.
That was this year. You mean 2016?
I'm just saying it was a big year.
All right. Rob, what's your number three?
Oh, let me check my iPod where I keep all my notes.
That you just wrote.
Let me swipe and scroll. All right,
my third story was to continue on with the election was the Republican primary, which I thought, in hindsight, was just the most funny thing I've ever seen in politics. I mean, you had because everybody had their chance and no one was suitable. Which I've never seen that before. Like, Rick Perry came out and was like, oh my God, Rick Perry. And then he stumbled on himself. And Herman Cain said, here, let me take that from you. And then Herman Cain was like, it wasn't just like...
I think there was a Michelle Bachman week.
There was a Michelle Bachman week, and then a Rick Santorum, oh, I think you can do it kind of time. And then there was never a Huntsman week. That never happened.
Newt Gingrich even had a 15-minute...
Right, everybody kind of had... It's because none of them were suitable, is what it came down to. And I just enjoyed that debacle a little bit.
That's what I don't understand about Ron Paul. I understand he's seen as a little crazy man and all that. He's not polished. But none of these other candidates were the answer. They were not.
Right.
But I guess they figured, well, we can polish the turds enough that they can get into the White House. And you can't do that.
And I guess I haven't heard from the hard right, which we don't have representative here.
No, we don't.
Like, why not Rick Perry? You know? Because before it all started, I mean, Rick Perry should be the ideal guy. Governor of the big state, you know, social conservative. Like, he ticks all the boxes. That's why he seemed like an unstoppable force. But no, I didn't hear any from any Republican during that time. It's like, that guy's got all the boxes ticked, but he's a dumb as a box of rocks,
he's
you know?
He's a doofus.
But nobody said he's a doofus, you know? Like, why can't you say you're doofus?
I can't say that, though.
Right.
You know what's interesting about him that I just heard recently? Because when he was elected governor, I mean, he was making all kinds of noise about seceding. You remember that? About Texas was going to secede from the Union. And then after Obama was elected, you had that whole slew of petitions on the White House's website.
Right.
To, you know, I don't know, it was 15 states or whatever. Well, Texas was one of them that wanted to secede. And I guess he made a statement saying he couldn't support that.
Oh.
It's like, come on, Rick.
Right.
Where are you on
where
this?
Where are you, Rick? Yeah.
To me, that always... smells of somebody got to him. Somebody with the money got to him and said, "You know, we don't need this.
Calm down."
Yeah.
So where's the Republican soul? Like, what is it now? Not because we know what a conservative is, but what is this Republican Party? It's a disaster right now. It seems.
Well, somebody came out saying that there's a civil war in the Democratic Party too. So I don't know. Both parties are soulless and just trying. What do we need to do to get this?
I think you got stability in the Democratic Party because of the kind of the presidency as the kind of the de facto leader of the party, and so you get that kind of consistent message going out. I mean, what's going to happen in 2016 when you have a real Democratic primary? You know, is it going to be any better? But I feel like it would be better. Like when we had our primary and we had Kucinich up there, like everybody giggled at him a little bit, but he didn't. There was no Kucinich week.
As Dave Barry said, speaking of lightweight gases, it is Kucinich.
So, the point you made about the stability, who is the leader of the Republican Party now? Right. I mean, you know, Romney, I guess, did he take a job at Kohl's or something? Is that what I heard?
Right.
Where is he working now?
He went to England to grow a beard like Al Gore did.
Smart way to do it. Yeah, I feel like there's a certain fantasy in the Republican Party. You know? All the Republicans tell each other these Ayn Rand kind of fantasies and get themselves all fired up, and it has no basis in reality, it seems. That's what it seems like to me. And so then they get themselves all fired up. They're like all the guys at Comic-Con that think it's great to have a Batman day, you know? And then they're running around the Starbucks, and they're the only guy in the Batman uniform. What am I doing here? I don't feel so comfortable anymore.
That's a pretty good analogy.
It is, and I think because not enough guys are willing to make the leap to wear the Batman uniform.
Right, come on, you had the Batman outfit on when we were together.
Yeah,
why'd you take it off?
In your basement, like, well, you know, I don't know. You might have seen
me. There's a girl over there. I want to wear my polo shirt. But if the message is right, the message is right. You know, this William Buckley quote that I heard a little while ago that I keep forgetting to bring up that said you have to be as conservative as you could possibly be and still win. Like you guys have forgotten the still win part. You know?
It's like right.
You only heard the first few words, you know? You have to right.
Preaching the choir there.
Don't come around. Anyway, so there you go, primary. That was a good story.
All right. My number three is the SpaceX launch of the Dragon module.
All right. It would be.
Dragon spacecraft.
It's usually my topic, Jerry.
I know. I stole a little bit of your thunder here.
He doesn't care about the space. He cares about the entrepreneurship.
That's right. It's a private company taking over space, as it should be. It is not a role for government. NASA should not be doing that.
I think, can I give you a vision of the future? And I thought of this when I was a kid, and I was like 8 years old, because I really wanted Star Wars to happen with lasers and stuff. Like, how long is it going to be before, like, people start staking out their territory for their satellites? You know, and now this private company's up there, and they want to fly their little millionaires up there. But now there's this other guy up there with his space junk, you know? So they're going to have to go defend your little space route and throw some, like, we might be pretty close to some kew, kew, kew. Pew, pew, pew. I'm kind of excited about,
maybe,
like, space war of some kind.
It's valid. It's already started with nations, and now I'm sure it will move to the private. Although it'll be, you have to get permission from your own government, and then it'll go from there. But
yeah,
what do like spaceship explosions look like in space? You know, in Star Wars, they're real fiery, but there's not much oxygen up there, as I understand.
There's none.
So when you like blow up the Death Star, does it just go? You know, it's just like
pretty much. Yeah.
It's kinetic. I'm pretty sure if you saw the when we shot down that satellite, because we didn't want benzene falling in the wrong. It wasn't about a weapons
test. It wasn't about
China.
Right.
When they just did a weapons test, that we could also do that. So watch out.
It's about the benzene.
That whole thing was such
It's all about the benzene.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's kinetic. I mean,
everything just
thousands, millions and billions of pieces.
And there's no sound, of course.
Right. And the lasers don't take a long time to go to their target.
Right.
You're just like shining a flashlight around. Yeah, it's like playing flashlight tag. That's not cool. I'm down on it already.
some more. We're going to get off your story.
No, that's fine. I mean, I just think that's significant that, you know, a private company that is not just a shell, you know, for... I think we talked about this on a past episode about, you know, how SpaceX has an actual business model. They've got some backlog built up. You know, they're going to be a successful company for years to come because they've got launches planned for other customers besides NASA. So it's not just, you know, NASA spun off part of their operation and called it a private company. So, you know, I think this is the future. I think, you know, Richard Branson and Virgin Galactic, that's, you know, that's going to have something to do in the future. I'm not sure exactly what yet.
Right.
Space tourism is going to happen sooner or later. I mean, we've already had a few examples through NASA or through the Russian Space Agency, but... I think somebody someday is going to, you know, make that happen. So the privatization of space has begun, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm not as hard line on the government not being involved as you are, but...
I think the space tourism is kind of akin to launching Facebook based on ad revenue. You know, it's like not gonna be that many people, but you know, if you could have a cheaper way of launching your goods up there, people are gonna want to launch their goods up there. Yes,
they're goods or they're good.
What kind of goods are we launching?
Maybe you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, you're back. We're back to you. Now, story
number two.
Well, talking about the sham of the Republican primary, I would like to talk about the sham vote at the Democratic National Convention.
Remind me. I don't even remember this.
Exactly. One. That's the issue, Rob. They were going to recognize... God in some part of Parliament. And they were going to do the vote by applause. It was, well, the vote didn't turn out. Anna's back.
My vote turned out.
Who'd you vote for, Anna?
She just said it turned out.
I'm not talking about politics.
Do you put your lady makeup stuff on and sitting in a chair next to a mirror? And like a hutch? I just saw this and I remember my grandma had one.
I don't know if he's implying that I'm old or that I need a better mirror to put my makeup on.
No. You said you like old things, and I just saw this in like some old cartoon.
It's called a vanity.
A vanity is what we're going with. I mean, what's the modern way? You do it in the sink, and you leave the faucet running all the whole entire time.
That's still a vanity.
But it's a vanity in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the thing that's outside the bathroom that you like sit
like movie stars
in. If I had one of those, that's where I would do it.
Would you be all about it?
But I not have one of those.
You don't need water. Water's not like a crucial element in the process.
No, you don't have to like mix it with water like and apply it like spackle to your face.
I don't really know how it works, but I know my wife's in the bathroom all the time.
Going a quarter-inch notch trowel.
Yeah. I think that's what he's implying.
So you would like to like sit at a like a little thing with a mirror and have like a hand mirror?
Sure.
Maybe a brush? I'm thinking.
You know, it takes me like... 35 seconds to apply my makeup every day, then...
But you would be able
in
to
the
sit.
Car on the way here.
I don't put my makeup on in the car.
Thank you.
But I did rear end somebody in a Starbucks drive-thru, so... I wasn't putting on my makeup, though. My
texting,
first
you were texting.
No, I was staying for my first. To pay the Starbucks lady.
Well, it was functional, though.
Yeah, but it was...
If you were sending a tweet, that's all right.
No, I don't tweet. But...
This is still funny.
The guy was the only person I've ever seen in the Starbucks drive-thru with the trailer hitch. So I didn't mess his car up.
You like won
it was like
Starbucks rear-end lottery there.
I did. And I happened to be wearing my boots that day, so he thought I was some cool country chick, and he drove a truck, so he was like, it's all right, honey.
It's like, you're one of me.
Yep.
You're one of my kind.
Yep.
I saw about that. Little did he know who you voted for.
I didn't vote, but...
That was good
for you. Hear that? She didn't vote.
She voted for Jerry.
This guy...
I wanted to write myself in, but they said then it wouldn't even, it would just be, FBI might start checking me out or something.
I'll throw you in too.
If I get too many votes, they might start researching me, and I can't afford to have that happen.
You wind up on a watch list.
I don't have a green card, so.
Neither do I.
We're all illegal.
Uh-huh. You want another beer?
Sure, Jeremy needs one too. Starting to make more sense.
I'm good for right now. Thank you.
You want the IPA again, or you want?
Yeah, the IPA is better now.
Okay, so the boat on
the boat on God. On God. Who's the dude? He's the governor in California, or not governor in California, but Adam Carolla calls him Villa Retardo. But the vote did not turn out the way they expected, so he's like, oh, that was pretty close, let's vote again.
That was the worst thing.
And finally, after three of those, he just declared it, streak, motion passes.
Right.
How is that not a just a facade, like the...
Yeah, talking about theater...
And you conveniently forgot about that, Rob.
No, I remembered it once you said. I didn't remember that, but... But yeah, the and that's the fear, I guess.
You still have the convention on your TiVo, don't you?
I
go back
and
watch it a couple times.
It's my precious... I think that's the worry of us moderates. Is like, it's that... In the primary coming up, we'll forget the lessons of Obama. We'll think that well, we just need somebody like that Obama was successful because he was very radically liberal or something. They'll forget that he actually proposes a message that's left of center, but I would not call it a radical liberal message. But you know what's going to happen in 2016 when they have 8 years of presidency? They're going to say, now's our time, baby, to really crank it. Let's go single payer. Let's beef up our union support. And it's just going to make us, it's going to make shooting pigs in a barrel. Pigs shooting, what are you shooting in a barrel?
Fish.
Shooting fish in a barrel for the Republicans.
Have another beer, Rob.
I don't even know how I got the shooting pigs. Angry birds or something? I don't know.
So the hang on, they're mixing margaritas or something.
So the key to success and why I'm an Obama man is that he can bring in the left and woo those independents. And I'm like somewhere in the middle there, so he speaks my message. But there's a danger of the whole message getting hijacked by people who are booing God. You don't boo God. He's got a big beard. He can smite you. Anybody who would smite thee, don't boo. You know?
Yeah, but that was first rule of politics.
Don't boo God. You know, and that's the worry. That's the worry. And Obama, regardless of the attacks on him, has been the steady hand on the tiller there. And that tiller's going to start going crazy, and it's going to start going left, you know, coming up here. And that's my worry. Because that's how you get Republicans in power, is you'd be crazy. Crazier than you think they are. So, yes, that was a glimpse of the future.
Everything you said there is incorrect.
What card? It was funny.
No, what you ended with, well, that's how you end up with Republicans in power, and whoa.
You don't want that.
I don't want that. In fact, we shouldn't be talking about we can't have Democrats in power, we can't have Republicans in power, we can't have morons who make poor decisions in power. And that's what we have. That is what we have. They're talking about more federal pumping. I'm not talking about Bill Clinton. Houston is
But I like my side's stupid ideas better than your side.
But they're still stupid ideas.
Yeah, can we agree on that, that we don't like any stupid ideas, regardless of which party they come out of?
That's true. But I think the worry was...
I'm going to be a bit of...
I mean, I think
It became more obvious with a Romney-style campaign where there was no soul to the Romney campaign. He was running as the figurehead of a Republican Party.
Right, right.
He was representing Republican
power. It was purely ideological.
Right, and it wasn't about him or his ideas or anything like that. It was like, we need, as a party, to take more controls of the branches of government. He was just a representative of that, which is kind of what you're talking about, you know.
So Obama, there was nothing ideological there.
I think Obama's the moderate hand on the tiller.
I think you're crazy if you think he's a moderate hand.
Yeah.
There's nothing
I'm
moderate.
I'm not going to go that far. I think because he was the incumbent, he got to run a different campaign than he would have otherwise.
That's true.
Ideologically, he could afford to maybe not check all the boxes that he normally would need to check.
But aren't those two things in conflict with each other? If he's completely not moderate, but he was able to run a campaign based on what he has done, well, he couldn't have been crazy radical, right?
Well,
if you...
Some of the stuff he's done is crazy radical.
And this is where I think maybe I'm listening to too much, you know, radical right radio, but when I see him out there and I see the votes that he's gotten and I see the electoral victory he had, I don't see that marrying up with the portrayal of him as a radical dude.
I mean, the votes he's gotten, I mean, the popular vote, what was the differential there?
Was 1.7% or some popular vote, but he did win 322 or some electoral votes.
Ooh. Now we're going to get into a debate about the electoral college.
I wasn't going to go down that road because when Bush won, it was, we need to go to the popular vote.
That's what I don't get, and this brings me kind of to my top story, but I don't get that if he's that much of a nut job, how he could possibly win 1.7% of the vote over his opponent. When Rick Perry, clearly nut job, couldn't even get through the primary.
Different kind of nut job.
Explain the nut job spectrum.
Well, I mean, left-wing nut jobs and right-wing nut jobs are different, right?
Yeah.
Do you think Rick Perry had, a personality flaw that made him stupid and weird, and Obama's just ideologically wrong? I think Obama's a smart guy that's somehow came to all the wrong answers when he filled out his math test, and Rick Perry forgot there was a math test. Is that what it is?
Rick Perry didn't study for the math test because he thought God was going to guide his hand.
Right, yeah. right. If God wants me to answer C, he always answers C.
Obama didn't study for the math test because the test is flawed, and so he's going to pass
anyway. That's not true.
Anyway.
I completely disagree. As I would criticize an Obama with the math test analogy, I would say he studied for the math test and he knew all his math, and then somehow he didn't agree with the answers that were on the sheet and he wrote all the wrong things down. I think he knows his stuff, but he draws the wrong conclusion.
Okay, he didn't agree with the answers. They were the correct answers, but he still didn't agree with them.
Right. But it's
so they need to fix the test. They need to equalize the test.
No, that's just silliness.
All right, well, then I don't understand anymore.
Which story was this?
This was your number two.
Let me check my iPod. Whoa, what is my... Oh, the election. Hey, we just did my number two. Was that... Yeah.
It was actually, you didn't say your number two yet. This was spinoff of the vote at the Democratic National Convention.
Oh, right. You're right. You're
we
right.
Just kept going. So now we've talked about the election. And
we'll segue into your number two.
Okay. So my number two is the recent rash of good news that has come out in the country. For example, AIG paid their government loan back, and the government made billions of dollars. Let's bail out some more banks.
The government made billions of dollars?
Yeah, they made a profit on their AIG investment by buying them out, and then AIG brought all their stock back, and they made like $100 billion or something.
And what's
on
$100
AIG,
billion?
So what's their
return on investment?
Yeah, what's the ROI on the whole thing?
Oh, the whole thing? I don't know. AIG
because when
out.
You see, you're talking about the good news is, hey, look what we made on AIG. Forget about this big hole sucking in the rest of the morning.
You're right. You're right. But hey, allow me to continue on my good news train.
Go ahead.
So AIG, one good thing. I think unemployment's down to 7.7%. Beautiful.
No, it's not, but all right.
I heard on NPR that, well, Obama was up in Michigan because Daimler Chrysler just invested $100 million to bring some manufacturing back to the U.S. And the gas prices are coming down. All right, so all of those things, I will go ahead and say I barely credit Obama. But here's my glory and joy, because I know that if Mitt Romney won that extra 1.7%, what I would have to hear about all this good news coming out would be, oh, the Republicans in the White House, the business community's opening up. Look at the oil companies making the gas prices low. And now they're hiring workers back, and the unemployment's down. And AIG, you know, I'd have to hear about this, like, with the same empirical data, with a different president elect that had nothing to do with it, the story would be completely different. And I'd just like to take a little glimpse into that alternate universe and enjoy the fact that I don't have to hear such rhetoric.
Okay, so take that idea that you would have hated hearing that about Romney if he won, because he was to be elect, and turn that around to how we have to hear that, well, it's Obama's policies are finally working, and now he's going to start taking credit for things where just 4 months ago, they were still blaming stuff on Bush.
That's good.
So, your basking in glory is basking in BS.
It smells nice to me, though, where I'm at.
To bask in anything right now is fooling yourself.
Right. I
know what you're saying, that, you know, you like to not have to hear all of the BS from the other side about.
And I think there's a little bit more of a case of 4 years of presidential policies versus like 1 month of presidential electness.
Yeah. I agree. That would be completely foolish for anybody to say, well, look, because they know he's coming in.
And now I behoove you.
Hopefully things will keep going on the up and up.
But I behoove you on Inauguration Day to check the trajectory of the country from 4 years of Bush. What was going on at that time when Obama got inaugurated the first time? And then look at the trajectory of the country when he got elected the second time. And that's a pretty dang good first term.
The minor detail of the debt.
Yeah, right. $14 trillion of debt.
You can't throw out those details, Rob.
Maybe he can fix the debt the second term and be Superman.
You're dreaming.
You're dreaming. Keep drinking, Rob.
Alright, Jerry's next. Story two.
Number two. I'm going to read the headline. This was a story we linked to in the reading room several episodes ago. Attorney General Holder defends targeted killings of Americans. I think that headline speaks for itself. It's just the shock value of the fact that an attorney general would somehow defend the administration's targeting and killing of Americans.
Does he take requests?
It's kind of disturbing to me. So that makes my top three, just because it's such a disturbing story.
And very clear.
Yeah, I don't know how to expand on that. They don't look at the laws and say, how do we live within them? It's how do we explain. We know what we're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
How do we explain to you that it's really right?
Right. How do we spin this? So, yeah, I mean, how is history going to view Eric Holder and the job that he has done if he's going to take a stand like this? I mean, I can't believe that...
It's not going to matter.
25 years from now, we're going to look back on you know, if we've progressed to the point where targeting Americans and killing them is commonplace, we're going to look back on this story as when we opened that door and walked through it.
I don't think anything's going to happen.
Okay. Well, I hope you're right.
I don't think they're going to pin it on him. I think somehow it'll go back. Well, the Bush doctrine started it all. Well,
it did.
See, we're already there.
But what about this potential quibble? One thing I've been kind of thinking about recently is just this whole concept of citizenship and what it grants you for someone who's not much of a nation man. You know, it's like what Eric Holder's really talking about is really more of a Jerry kind of point of view. You have this guy over there who's dedicated the last 10 years of his life to like destroying the country. And yes, he has a citizen card, but how much of a citizen is he really? You know, how much? It plays out in all kinds of kind of State Department interactions or when you travel. Like,
Rob, that's the best thing you've said all year.
Hey, I peaked late.
Well, so I mean, I hear what you're saying, but where do we find the authority to just go after these individuals and kill them? I mean, if they've done something wrong, if they've committed a crime, they should be put on trial, right? They should have their day in court. That's the way a justice system works.
Right.
And he is the top cop. He is in charge of the Department of Justice.
Right.
And we're not doing justice. We're targeting individuals because they're enemies of the state.
Right. And we're asked to believe that they're doing the right thing.
And, you know, I would not care if this title said Americans or not.
Right.
The fact that we're targeting anybody and just going out and killing them, I mean, it's the whole Judge Dredd thing, right? It's I'm judge and executioner all in one.
Right.
You're evil. We have put you on a list. The next time we see you, we're going to kill you.
Yeah, America! Yeah!
Well, it's supremely disturbing.
It is.
And it is not something that the you know, land of the free and home of the brave should be doing on the world stage.
Do you think we are...
It's disgraceful.
Make a good case. This is my impression, so probably wrong, especially the wrong ones, but we don't talk about human rights violations the way we used to. The country, the government as a whole, does not speak out and say, you know what, we don't agree with the way you're treating your people or the way you're doing this or that. We don't seem to come out and talk about that the way we used to. And I think maybe it's because our hands are so bloody now that we have no leg to stand on.
Well, I'm not sure that that's entirely true. I mean, I think we do still come out against certain countries. I mean, Obama just made his statement this past week about Syria and, you know, that they are now recognizing rebels as the only legitimate government in Syria. So,
I guess part of what I'm talking about is in North Korea.
Yeah.
He is a general or what he was. But he was mortared for what did he
like martyred or mortared?
Mortared. he made during the moment of silence for Kim Jong Il, he did something. He yawned or he spoke. He did something to bring shame and, you know, ruin the moment of silence. So Kim Jong-un ordered that he be essentially obliterated. So they put this guy, the story goes, I wasn't there, this could be propaganda from us, but they put him essentially like, okay, here are the crosshairs, you stand there, and they dropped a mortar. They launched a mortar and just blew this guy.
I thought you were saying they made him like a human cannonball. They loaded him as a mortar shell and just launched him.
What they, instead of you know, we're going to put you in prison, we're going to lethal inject, you know, lethal, whatever. It was, no, we're going to obliterate you.
Firing squad by mortar.
Yes, we have zeroed in this mortar, and you go stand there.
Yeah, here, stand here.
See you later.
How embarrassing is it the mortar missed?
That'd be pretty funny. Isolated case.
You think we've lost our moral soul?
I think in a lot of ways we have.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
not just government.
But you know, that's been a long time coming. Because, you know, if you want to do the root cause analysis, you can go all the way back to the Whiskey Rebellion for losing our moral compass.
I love when Jerry goes back to the Whiskey Rebellion. It just does it for me. I'm more of a Boxer Rebellion man.
You can, you know, go back to Lincoln. You can go back to FDR. There's plenty of watershed events in our history where our moral compass seemed to have suffered. But most recently, the Bush administration. I mean, he did more to tarnish our moral compass than any president in recent memory,
right,
including Obama.
Right, and then Obama's kind of legitimized it by saying, well, yeah, this isn't an isolated incident.
Right, you know, we're just going to continue this.
Right.
Continue and expand.
Right.
Well, and I think one of the worst things about Bush is that we had a real chance to right a lot of wrongs, because right after September 11th,
the entire world was on our side.
Yes.
And we had played that correctly. Yeah, if we played that correctly, it would be Pax Americana, right? I mean, we could have the entire world still on our side. And instead, you know,
that would have turned back the clock 50 years.
Instead, it was like, you know, the headline on The Onion, Operation Piss Off the Planet. That's what we have been engaged in now for 11 years.
And I think it all comes down to the urge to do something about Iraq, no matter what.
Right.
You know, I think that was the state goal. It was as much, I equate it, I probably said this before, when Bush got elected, there were people in there that said, we need to take down Iraq. In the same way that when Obama got elected, they said, we need to pass health care reform. Like, had no idea what anything that was going on in the world, what the economy was, what, you know, they just thought that was their time.
So, that was number one agenda item.
Right. And then September 11th happened, and they said, woohoo, now we got our chance, you know, just like when
if you believe the conspiracy theorists.
Well, oh, don't even. Yeah, he needs another beer now.
Yeah.
Bringing up conspiracy theories. You see my job.
When I start talking 9/11 truth theories, it's time for another beer. We're going to take a little break. When we come back.
That was a teaser.
When we come back, we're going to do our number one stories. So stay with us.
And unto certain shepherds brought tidings of the same, how that in Bethlehem was born the Son of God by name. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. Oh, star of wonder, star.
All right, we are back. And we each have our number one story left to reveal. Let's start with Jeremy's number one.
Rob, get your scoffing voice ready.
Oh, I'm ready. What? All right, I'm ready.
My number one. Hear me out. My number one is the Obama phone lady. Partly because since we did this a night early, I didn't have time, Rob, to review more stories, but this sticks out in my mind. This video, not because of, you can call me a racist if you want, but I don't think that's it. I think it goes back to, this is the grade school or middle school, if you elect me president,
right,
I'm gonna bring in some cupcakes.
That's right, ice cream every day in the cafeteria.
No homework. And I'll go ahead and bring in some cupcakes on, you know, a couple days before the vote. And, I'm going to vote for that guy. He's rubbing some cupcakes. Right. And it's, you're selling your future for the low, low price of $30 a month. You know, you get a cell phone for, you know, the phone itself for free, and these pay-as-you-go plans for not much of anything. And that was the big, I mean, this was, oh, this guy gave me a phone. Oh my gosh. Forget all other facts. Forget that I don't know anything about the other candidate. I just know he sucks bad. There was no cogent argument for anything.
He sucks because he didn't give me a phone.
Yes. It was a very binary, it was phone, no phone. Or free something, not free something. That was it. And Rob, you talk about, well, how did he get so many votes if he's so radical? And free stuff.
Scoff away, Rob.
And that's not the majority. I'm not
it's
saying
been
that's
building
the majority,
like a volcano of
I'm
scoff.
Not saying that's the majority of his supporters, but there are enough that say,
right, it's a non-zero amount.
It's a non-zero amount. There are enough that it's not a phone. It's
is it 1.7% perhaps?
I think it might be.
That's lots of millions. That is a lot of million of people that said, my guy over your guy. America's name. I know, like,
that's a lot of phones.
Guy. That's a lot of phones.
Look how at many, that program. How many, there's probably been a million phones.
How many of those millions are about Obama phones, and how many are just reasonable people that think that his programs make more sense than the Republican?
And that,
like, are you looking at outliers or?
Probably. I mean, in all honesty, it's not mainstream, but.
No, but
it's indicative of the giveaway culture.
Yes, and you can say, Jeremy, you are going down the wrong road. Maybe I am, but that story sticks out of my mind as this is what we're up against.
You're promoting the idea that Obama won because he was Santa Obama. Ho, 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 give away a bunch of free stuff and win the election by providing things from nowhere like Santa does.
Yeah, okay. That's what this administration has done. That's what a lot of administrations have done up to this point. And it's, we're at the breaking point. All we hear now is fiscal cliff this, fiscal cliff that.
So-called fiscal cliff. Can't say fiscal cliff without so-called fiscal cliff. I appreciate so-called before.
Fine. Why can't he win on a platform of, hey, we need to rein things in. This, you know, this number over here is too large. We can't sustain this. Instead, it's, everybody needs everything.
Are you serious? I give it my are you serious. I'm past scoff. I'm all the way to are you serious.
Okay.
He ran on a campaign that said we need to raise taxes on the wealthy over $250,000 and we need to cut spending. That was, in broad strokes, that was the campaign. He won on that. And he went to the fiscal cliff and said, you know what we should do?
We should give me the power to unilaterally raise the debt ceiling. That's what he's going on.
He's trying to negotiate exactly what he campaigned on and won. He said, let's raise taxes on people who make $250,000 or more. Let's cut the Bush tax cuts for that crowd. And we'll cut the spending over here. You know what the Republicans say? If you raise a dime of taxes on rich people, we're out. So they're running on the same campaign that they just lost in. One guy, my guy, is being reasonable in this argument.
I don't think he's being reasonable.
I think he is.
We're
looking at Jerry.
Yeah, both of them are looking at me as the voice of reason.
Well, because to me, $250,000, that's not...
To me, that's a lot of money.
It's not rich.
Would you feel rich if you were cranking quarter mil? You got to
make it a unit of
money. Well, I would probably spend a lot more money if I was making that much money.
You'd have to fight with a
like
much different crowd, though.
I would have one of those vanities where I put spackle my makeup on.
Yeah.
I hear that's how it works up there.
And you'd have a whole closet full of cameo pins.
I would.
Would you hang? All right, right now.
But I would buy the show ones, not the acrylic ones, because I could afford them.
Think of all your friends, and now you're making $250,000 a year. Would you have the same friends?
I've had the same friends since I was like 12, so probably.
Would you be able to relate to them the same way when you're living large in your mansion?
Duh, they would love me even more. My best friend makes probably twice what I do. And I don't do horribly for myself. She drives me around her Cadillac and lets me sleep on her couch when I have a bad day.
Do you do the little tilt seat thing in the Cadillac?
That's the one.
No, I do get to turn the butt warmers on whatever temperature I want.
I don't like those.
No, it makes me feel like I have a kidney disease. Like it warms me up in strange places. Yeah, I'm not into it.
Maybe your lower back is disproportionate to the warmers.
I got chunk in the trunk.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, I don't like the butt warmers at all. It makes me feel like something's going wrong.
I'm not a fan of them.
Make me feel like I need to run to the bathroom.
I like
them. Does it make you feel cozy? Make you feel like my butt's hot. Yeah.
Well, you know how girls you do are whenever they're trying to cuddle with you, so they always want to like put their butt on you, because their butt's like the coldest part of their body, and they want to steal all your body heat. That's why chicks like
it. Why didn't you give me a Cadillac?
Maybe Obama will get you a Cadillac.
That's right. Oh, we got eye rolling, so we got a hint.
Well, I just don't think he goes around buying people Cadillacs.
You are correct. Home. You're correct.
Maybe
there.
If you want a Portuguese water dog or something, he's all over it.
He might give you one.
Or a phone. He might buy you a phone.
He might buy you a phone. Have you heard about the Obama phone program that Jeremy is really excited about?
This is a real program.
No, but I spilled gold sugar on my phone, so maybe you won't buy me a new phone.
That might be worth more than the phone itself. It's got those real gold flakes on there.
When I turn it in, I'm going to be like, make sure you weigh that gold. That was like double shot.
Gold sugar.
True story.
Watch the eyes. No, Rob, I don't think it's about $250,000. Yeah, that is a good living. But I don't think those vultures make it $250,000. They need to pay more. I don't think that. And I think this,
but
all this about 14% and rich people only pay 14%, that's... That's not the majority.
I think if you look at the trends over the recession and how people have done throughout the economic spectrum, rich people have gotten richer and richer and richer over the last 12 years. Part of that due to the Bush tax cuts that specifically helped to favor them. And I don't think it's too much to ask to just roll that back to the way it was before. And I don't think that's a radical thought. I don't think that's a crazy thought. In fact, he ran on exactly that thought. Not on Obama phones. He didn't make a campaign about phones. I don't remember hearing about phones on the campaign stop. He said, this is exactly my platform. And he won by 322 to 200 chump. And now he's trying to do exactly the same plan that he just won on on the fiscal cliff debate, Republicans giving it the same Mitt Romney crap.
I don't think he's trying to run on the same thing that he campaigned on. I don't think. I don't think he's bargaining on the same thing he ran on and was elected on. I don't think that's true, Rob.
I think it's true. I think the quibble that I thought you would bring up was the fact that all of these spending cuts that are...
They're not cuts. Well, it's like he said, we're going to end these wars, so we're going to cut spending. That's not a cut.
Right. And that's the real... That's what you should really be talking about.
I am talking about it.
You started with phones. But that's what you should really
talk
about.
That's the point of my story. That's the point of story number one, is that they're not looking at the real issues.
I think you have a point. It's a classic Democrat plan that says cut these taxes now, and we'll cut this spending over 10 years. Like, right? Isn't that that's an Obama and Democratic tactic, where starting in January 1st, your taxes are going to go up, and we'll cut the spending over a 10-year plan, you know, when these wars...
But it doesn't get cut.
Right, and it doesn't get cut because something else happens, and now we get... Oh, that was the other president.
I saw that other desk, and it's in my other coat. Left those notes in my other coat. The point is, you have people making decisions that I can understand. Somebody who supports Obama and says, I like the fact that he wants certain people to pay more in taxes. Fine. You've thought about it. But there, and maybe the other side has the same amount of people. Maybe they do. So this is probably, this number one story is junk. You have the same amount of people on the other side who are blindly voting without analyzing,
right,
because
sure,
they think
right.
they're going to get something out of it too, but I don't see it the same way.
All right.
All right, moving on. Rob, give us your number one.
All right, my number one is the election of Obama 2012. Woohoo!
That wasn't his number one until he arrived here, and Jerry reminded him about that.
I forgot about the election. And I'll tell you why. It's not just woohoo, my guy won. Is what I hope will happen through the fact of this victory is that it will legitimize him and put him in the canon of regular presidents. And we can talk about him as a president. And we can judge his merits and his deficiencies as they are. Maybe we can get past Donald Trump talking about birth certificates. Maybe we can get past some secret Muslim. Maybe we can get past some Dinesh D'Souza, you voted on for him, but you don't know him. Like, get past all of that. He's got his second term. Let's see what happens. Let's look at the first term on the merits, which you can debate, and let's start comparing them against other presidents and what they've done, and let's just really get that started. And I think this election allows that to happen, versus if he got beat by Mitt the hair man.
Why do you say derogatory things like that about Mitt Romney? You say Mittens, Mitt the hair man, but if you say something like that about Obama...
You could say funny things about Obama. That's fine. You could talk about his funny ears.
No, I don't think you don't, and people don't. They're better not saying anything bad about
him. He does have funny ears. But you could say bad things about him. That's kind of what I'm talking about. It's like, now that he got elected, let's look at the first term for what it is. Let's see what happens in the second term. Let's start criticizing the guy for what he has done and what he has not done.
Okay.
And let's just get away on birth certificate,
all right,
Kenyan, anti-Bush. We'll agree. We'll shake hands right here in front of the microphone.
Let's talk about why he hasn't closed Guantanamo Bay.
Let's do it.
Promise, okay?
Yes.
Let's talk about all those promises. And you're saying, well, forget about that. He did all this stuff. Yeah, but he promised all this stuff.
No, I think that's why election's my number one story. Not just because he won, because it opens the debate for let's talk about Guantanamo. Because how much did we talk about Guantanamo?
You should have been talking about that 3 years ago.
Exactly. And how much did we talk about in the campaign versus how much did we talk about he wants to give everything to the 53% or whatever.
And I think the key there is that he was reelected, you know, because
if he hadn't been, it would have been, you know, he would have just been a one and done, flash in the pan.
Right.
And, you know, it probably wouldn't have happened again in our lifetime that we would have had a minority president.
Right, right.
But now that, you know, he has successfully been reelected, gone two terms, nobody can question his legitimacy as a president.
Right.
I agree with that. And, you know, I was on the record as saying when he won that I was actually happy to see that happen, that I was alive to see it. Because I was tired of the endless parade of old gray-haired white guys, you know.
I agree with that. But I don't. I wanted. Maybe this is just as bad as not wanting a black person. But I wanted a Dennis Haysbert, like a badass. Obama is a dork.
He's a nerd.
He is.
Yeah. Kind
of. But he's very. He's very sociable. But he can't throw a baseball.
I still don't feel like we've had our first black president. I don't.
You mean he wasn't black enough?
Is that what you're saying?
I want Dennis Haysbert. I want a badass.
We got to elect Ice Cube as president.
Yeah, I want him to go in there and kick ass. I don't think Obama's done that. No, I'm not falling into that he's not black.
And I'm talking Ice Cube and Boys in the Hood, you know, with the pick sticking out of his throat. Right. That's what I'm talking about.
What about Upgrade from Idiocracy? Remember Upgrade? President Upgrade?
That was awesome. Oh, you should see it. Dude. Sorry, Jerry, I interrupted your...
You've never seen Idiocracy?
No, I haven't. Oh, I live it.
We're going to have to kick you out of the podcast.
Good.
All right, Jerry's number one.
No, you were on a... You're glad he got it, and I interrupted.
No, that's all I have to say, is that I'm glad he did, and you know, for that reason, I can relate to what Rob is saying. You know, if he's going to be the first, I'm glad to see he was successful by some measure.
Right.
You know, I would hate to see the first time we elect a minority president and it's just a complete train wreck.
Right.
And then, you know, everybody's gun shy about electing a minority again for 50 years or something.
Right.
I don't think that would be good for the country.
Right. And let's start comparing him, like if you're a Republican, let's just start comparing him against other Democratic presidents. Let's compare him against Clinton.
Right.
Or you know, whoever else.
Carter.
Right. And stop just... Get rid of this whole, like, he's, you know, completely out of the mainstream kind of a guy.
But see, I take issue because you have other black leaders, but they're not the right kind of black leader. Like, Alan Keyes.
Right. What about him?
He's not good enough for Al Sharpton.
It's because he's a tool.
Well,
no.
He was a birther.
He was a birther.
So
doesn't have anything to do with blackness.
But he's a black leader. Why can he not? Why can we not look at him and say, well, you know, he was elected and he has people obviously like him.
Yeah,
that's a good point. That's the topic of the whole other show.
Oh yeah, you're right. Something good. So let's not talk about it anymore.
You're right.
Go on.
You're right.
Move on.
You're right. And the concept of black leader doesn't really mean those two words put together, right? It doesn't mean a leader who's black. It means a certain kind of political view.
Yes.
That right. In the big dinner box. You're right. I'm agreeing with you.
What's wrong, Jeremy? He conceded your point.
Onward. Onward's up.
Onward. Okay. Well, since we're talking about black leaders, my number one story is Trayvon Martin.
Hey!
The murder of Trayvon Martin. We talked about that considerably on this show. The holidays are coming up. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't characterize it that way.
Yeah, calling it murder, that's kind of...
Well, I mean, it seems like a lot of people want it to be that way.
Well, it doesn't make it right.
No, I'm not saying it is, but, you know, we have talked about this previously on the show about, you know, the deeper implications of this case and the whole, you know, stand your ground laws that are, you know, present in certain states. But I don't know. This story has been intriguing to me simply because you know, it just seemed to constantly flip-flop back and forth, you know. For the first several weeks or months that, you know, after the story broke, it was like every week there was some new development that just completely changed your perspective of you know, how it all went down.
Part of that, I think, was the media, instead of trying to report the story, they were trying to make the story.
Right.
They kept coming out that, well, they edited this tape, and they, well, they edited that, and they, right. Well, they didn't release this photo. And just 2 weeks ago, they had more photos of Zimmerman with a bloody nose.
Right,
and
right. Yeah, I got those in the show notes. Also, the story to George Zimmerman sues NBC Universal over the edited 911 call.
Yeah.
Which, you know, to me is obviously he's trying to fund his defense. And NBC's got deep pockets. So, you know, he'll probably get a couple million out of that.
The American way. But, again, you can say, well, he's just trying to do this. But that's a big entity attacking
sure.
someone small.
And I'm not saying that they were right in doing that.
I think we have too much of that where you have a large force using, because a loss to them doesn't mean much. They can handle it, and it's a tsunami over the little guy.
Right. Yeah. So the other story I have in the rating room is the photos that appear to show Zimmerman bleeding after the Trayvon Martin killing. I think that's interesting in itself, that it's taken this long for those photos to be released.
Right.
Because the police took them that night, right after the incident occurred. He was clearly beat up. I don't believe he did that to himself.
I'm kicking my ass.
And, you know, combine that with the photos that were released early on of the blood on the back of his head, you know, it seems like he was in a legitimate scuffle. Now,
right.
Did he...
Does that still warrant
right.
some deadly force?
Right. Did he feel threatened to the point where deadly force was justified? I don't know. That would be pretty hard, I think, for any jury to decide, but... You know, but it is clearly at this point to me not what it was portrayed as, you know, an overzealous neighborhood watch guy who was just out looking for, you know, somebody to shoot.
Well, aren't you trying to? Doesn't this whole case come down to trying to put motivations? We're trying to place internal motivations on both players, right?
Well,
like, like, it goes all the way from the guy that's like, I want to go shoot a kid tonight, to like some kind of thug that wants to go, you know, bang Whitey's head on the ground, or whatever it is. You know, and it's somewhere in the middle is probably what has happened. And
he's not a white guy.
He's a white Latino. That was discussed on the show. Remember that?
Yes. A white Hispanic.
A white Hispanic or whatever.
Yes. Whatever that is.
Right, and it raises questions on the whole gun control issue, because when he went out on the neighborhood watch packing a piece, he had no concept that this was going to happen. I think, you know,
right.
And if he wasn't packing a piece, what would have happened? Maybe he would have, you know. Maybe it would have just been that, and or maybe he would have gotten more hurt, right? Maybe the piece saved his life.
Maybe
or maybe he would have been the same amount of hurt, and nobody would have gotten shot, and he wouldn't have had this case, you know?
Right.
This is Rob. You can go ahead and say this is me hanging on the wrong fact, but the fact that he was told by a police officer, "Don't get maced, get a gun," because of dogs in the neighborhood he encountered.
Right.
He was told by a police officer,
right.
Yeah, get a gun. That says something to me.
And I think with the gun control thing, like that's what I think gets missed in the whole gun control debate is the idea of people carrying a gun just to stick it in the face of those who think they can't carry a gun. You know, I'm going to do this anyway. You know, that's what I'm going to do. Without understanding the full ramifications of what happens when you get into a scuffle and something happens, there's a drunk guy at the bar, or whatever it is. You know, I think we lose you lose sense of what that really means to be walking around with a piece on your lap. Although I did have this invention idea. You know, we've gone through the idea of the fanny pack. Fanny pack's kind of out of favor. But what if you have an open carry state and you have an iPhone? What about a combination holster iPhone? Like, so you can carry your gun and your phone, right? And not have it in your pocket? You'd have, like, your... You have like your Glock and your phone, like, oh.
Well, but in case you draw the
wrong one. Yeah, what if you draw the wrong one?
Then you gotta sue somebody, you gotta sue them.
But I think we should bring back like the gun fanny pack.
Alright. So if any of our listeners want to contribute to Rob's Kickstarter project.
I'm a fan of the Magnum PI style where it's just in the back of your belt loop.
Yeah.
Your back jeans, pants.
That's right.
What about in the sock?
I never liked the sock.
Have you ever worn the...
Since you brought that up, though...
socks?
Socks?
Let's see. Did I put this in the show notes? I meant to. I need to add a link. State of Illinois, federal court in Illinois just declared their law against concealed carry unconstitutional.
Yeah.
So... They handed it back to the lower court and told them to deal with it. Gave them 180 days. So basically, anybody who lives in Illinois who wants to carry got 6 months. And either the legislature is going to have to, you know, pass a law to allow concealed carry, or it's going to be completely anything goes, you know, because this law that's on the books has been declared unconstitutional.
Oh, great. Now crime's going to go up in Chicago.
And Illinois, I'd like to point out, Illinois was the last state that was, that forbid carrying a loaded weapon at any time, for any reason, under any circumstances. So, I think this is a victory for, you know, gun advocates. But, you know, in this case, in the Trayvon Martin case, maybe concealed carry just confused the issue. Like, if he had been openly carrying, you know, maybe it would not have gone the way it did. Because
it's very possible. See somebody with a sidearm.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if you're intending to do harm to somebody else. You're a criminal and you're going out looking for a victim. And you know, people could be carrying concealed. You're going to think twice about doing the crime. That's different from, you know, you're in a bar and you just, you know, you've had too much and you're going to pick a fight with somebody. The guy's got a gun on his hip. He's not the one you're going to pick a fight with. And so there's a much stronger deterrent force there to openly carrying than concealed carrying.
I read an interesting article about robberies, home invasions,
yeah.
Burglaries. In the United States, something like 6 to 12% of them happen when the homeowner is there, when the home is occupied. Relatively low number.
Right.
In Britain, where owning weapons, if people just don't have them in their homes, is it illegal there?
Yeah.
I think you can, you know, gun clubs, you can have them there, but that's it. You can't have them in your home. 46% of burglaries happen when somebody is in the home.
Right.
The home,
they call it a hot burglary.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have to take something away from that.
Right. Yeah, I don't remember where. We must have read the same story this week because I remember. I don't read Drudge. I remember reading that same statistic. I think it was 41%, though.
Okay.
But yeah, you're right. It's significantly higher. The number of home invasions in England versus the U.S.
Well, right. That was compelling. Yeah, I read that.
So,
and wasn't it home invasions when the
people were home.
Right. Yeah, they don't, you know, burglars don't do that here in the United States because they know they're going to get shot.
Right, right. Yeah, America.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need to have an on location at a shooting range.
You can do that.
For some concealed carry training and.
Yeah,
it's good for sound.
Bring my Glock.
I'll bring mine. My Glick 42. It's got a double barrel cock gun and a cartridge you can insert from the front. And for semi-transparent automatic capabilities, which are really good in tight quarter urban environments.
Yeah.
Did I sound like a compelling gun owner?
No. No, you weren't pulling that off, sorry. Alright, do we have any stories in the reading room we need to... our listener Eric provided us with a link to the case for more guns.
Hey, I read that.
And more gun control. Maybe that was the story we read it in.
Because
since we all read that, yeah. So I have that link in the show notes. Our listeners can check that out.
I like the.
Jeremy has one.
Detroit.
Obama administration not as open as promised.
Oh, the one below that.
Oh, sorry. Quid pro quo, Detroit wants money for voting. What was that one about? I didn't know.
It's a councilwoman who, from Detroit who came out and said, hey, we supported you in the election. Now you need to. We're bankrupt. You need to bail us out. And she specifically said, quid pro quo.
Okay.
Isn't that an ethics violation? Isn't that highly unethical? I mean, they specifically says no quid pro quo. And if we reach the point of saying, well, since I voted for you, then I need to directly get money or a phone. That's the point, Rob. That's, I mean, you can say no, Jeremy. You can say it again. You say it a lot. No, you're way out to lunch on this. But that is not asking for a bailout just because you voted for somebody. That's not what this is meant to be.
Right. I agree with you.
Then why is it okay?
It's not okay.
But it keeps happening. It's happening more.
That's stupid people being stupid.
But they're in positions of leadership, Rob. That's the point.
There's all kinds of stupid people in leadership.
I know, and they keep... It's perpetuating because they say, well, they're not electing because they get stuff.
I think what I'm trying to convince you of is you can't paint the fact that there are Democratic majorities in the Senate and Obama won the presidency on the most radical cases you can find that says we voted for you, now bail me out. I don't think that's... And that kind of came out of some of the post-election analysis with the Santa Obama and the minorities, like the minority turnout. Like, I don't think that was really it. Because if you can... There's been presidents who've had all the... Like Jimmy Carter had sewn up the minority vote. And he had a little trouble in 1980. It's not really about the minority vote.
You think the minority with the larger population...
I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters. It was the independents that twisted it. It's people like me. White guy.
Misguided people like you. Sure, right. Yeah, there are more, that's what I'm saying, there are more misguided people now. But I give their defense a ton of credit.
All right. The only other story here I wanted to mention was, title is Often Wrong, But Never in Doubt. It's a story about a couple of studies that were done on how intelligent people can be fooled. And they break it down into Republicans, Democrats, and Libertarians. And,
tell us about it.
It's kind of interesting. I don't know. They did a series of studies where they asked them some questions that tested their cognitive abilities, and then they divided them into three groups. One of the groups, they told them, hey, people who believe in global warming tend to get these questions right more often than not. And another group, they told them, people who don't believe in global warming tend to get these questions more often, you know. And what they were trying to isolate was this, you know, the Republican brain, which is what they referred to it as in the story. I don't know. You have to read it. It's interesting.
I've never clicked a reading room link. It's maybe my first time.
All right, Rob.
You
well,
listeners, my head is in my hand.
Face palm.
Yeah. I like to just be in the reading room. I feel like I'm already there. I don't need to read these books. I hang out in the library. I'm the guy who hangs out in the library and doesn't read anything.
Yeah, I'll just ask the guy, right before the test, I'll ask the guy next to me, first I'll ask him for a piece of paper and to borrow his pen, because that's what, you know, you do to me every time you do the sound location thing. And then you'll just ask him, why don't you just summarize this for me, too, while you're at it? While you're getting my pen out. Because you have too many pens.
That's right.
You've got to pass a law to make sure everybody take... We're going to take away some of your pens and give them to everybody.
I'm a sensitive soul.
Nice.
All right. I want to thank our listeners for putting up with us for another year.
That's the truth.
Holy cow.
Hung in there.
And, wish all of you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we'll see.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Only 2 days of Hanukkah left. I haven't received one dang gift. I'm in for 8 crazy nights.
And we'll see you next time.
Good night. Merry Christmas.
What I think has most attracted me to this whole process is watching the political maturity of the American people. Because there was a great question during the first election as to whether or not Barack would even be elected. And after the turnout so emphatically put him in the presidency, it was interesting to watch the second turn when everybody really didn't quite know what the game would be. Well, the American people in their maturity declared themselves fully. We want what Barack Obama is talking about. We want the country to go in that direction. And what fascinates me is that in the face of millions of Americans expressing their desire, the whole political establishment defining its game, that there should be this lingering infestation of really corrupt people who sit trying to dismantle the wishes of the people, the mandate that has been given to Barack Obama. And I don't know what more they want. The only thing left for to Obama to do is to work like a third world dictator and just put all these guys in jail. You're violating the American desire.